You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's oh! Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at lockedonbulls.com and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Light that up with all of your voicemails and your text messages. We'd love for you to be a part of the conversation, so 331-979-1369. Matt, welcome back. A lot of Bulls things to get into today, but first thing is a Cubs fan. Are you nervous? Are you nervous that your boy Bryce Harper might be getting pitched by the White Sox today?
No.
Sounds like a Cubs fan who's a little bit nervous.
Hey, man. No, I'm not. I just, you know, we just a few days ago got to relive our World Series triumph of 2016. I'm still basking in that glow. You Sox fans trying to find a little glimmer of hope for your rebuild. Whatever helps you sleep at night, man. I couldn't care less.
Sounds like a Cubs fan who is worried that they are not going to land Machado, not going to spend the money on Harper. So I just wanted to throw that out there, and maybe some Bulls fans a little angry if you're not a White Sox fan too, considering the money that would be spent over on the South side rather than on the West.
If there's anything that you know grinds my gears, to borrow a Peter Griffin phrase, it is the fact that Jerry clearly cares about one of his organizational sons more than the other. But hey, that's nothing new.
I can't say I'm upset, at least at this point. So yeah, any White Sox fans out there rocking with me, you know, you're at least a little bit excited after seeing that picture today of a potential pitch at the United Center. So we'll keep you updated on that. But Bulls Pelicans last night, Anthony Davis had the night we expected. You know, I thought Wendell Carter Jr. did a pretty solid job, as much as you can, of trying to stop Anthony Davis. And that's kind of where I want to start this conversation, Matt. Anthony Davis, though, man, he did it all last night. Same with Drew Holiday. But what did you think of Wendell Carter Jr.'s performance kind of matched up with Anthony Davis there?
Yeah, I mean, most importantly and most impressively to me, Wendell stayed out of foul trouble. He only had three fouls in this game. I was expecting him to pick up two quick fouls trying to guard AD to start this game right off the bat, but he stayed in there, young tough. I thought it was pretty funny that the Bulls' first offensive possession, Wendell tried to go to work in the post on AD, and he just got his shot attempt just swatted away. But he held firm after that. He stuck, he stuck with it. And yeah, of course, you know, Anthony Davis went off 32 points on 13 of 24, also adding 15 rebounds. But that's what Anthony Davis does. He is. I think, you know, without a doubt, the best big in the league right now. I think I can confidently say that. And Wendell, it was the latest in a long list of people that he has been asked to guard as a 19-year-old starting in this league. His first start in the NBA, he's got to guard Joel Embiid. Then he's got to go against Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin. He's got to battle with Nikola Jokic last week. Now he's got to, you know, now he's got to do his best to guard AD. I liked what I saw from Wendell. The kid looks more and more poised with each game, and we've only played a dozen games. Like, that is very encouraging.
Yeah, and Fred Hoiberg kind of, I think Fred Hoiberg got a technical yesterday, too, in that game, trying to stick up for Wendell Carter Jr., because it seems like every game so far, he's been getting beat up, or, you know, he's getting the rookie calls on fouls, and in part, Wendell's strength and his weight is getting tossed around a little bit, so you tend to watch him reach a little bit more than usual. But I think those are things that are all going to come with time. But I thought he did, for the most part, a pretty solid job on Anthony Davis last night. You know, Wendell Carter Jr., 17 points, 11 rebounds, 3 blocks and a steal, and only 1 turnover. And he also, like you had said, stayed out of foul trouble, too. So I enjoyed that, watching that. Let's get to the most notable thing, I think, from this entire game, and that's some of the defensive sets that the Bulls were running. More importantly, the one where they came out of a timeout, they went down, missed a shot. The Pelicans all run in transition. Jabari Parker, among a few other guys on the floor, don't necessarily try to get back at all, and they score immediately. Fred calls a timeout and is immediately in Jabari Parker's ears. What was your reaction to that?
Yeah, I mean, you saw it on the replay when they took the camera angle that could see all the way back to the opposite baseline, where after that Bulls possession, Jabari just kind of stands there on the opposite baseline for a second. And then at some point, after a long pause, like, oh, I guess I should probably maybe get back, and just kind of half-assedly jogs. Well, guess what? The Pelicans, you know, transition offense, fast break, gets an easy bucket on the other end. Fred calls a timeout and looks exasperated, walks onto the floor very quickly with his arms, you know, open, saying kind of like, what the heck? Like, what the heck was that, Jabari? And, you know, Fred was, of course, asked about that exchange immediately following the game, and he kind of downplayed it and said it wasn't just about Jabari. You know, he's just the first guy I walked to. But come on, we all know that Fred has been frustrated with Jabari's lack of defensive effort so far this season. That's no secret. And for all of those people who wanted to praise Jabari for having one of his more effective offensive games last night, 20 points, chipped in on the glass as well, and he was efficient, I think 7-14 from the field. Guess what? He's still dogging it on defense. And it's pissing Fred off, and rightly so.
I was going to say, Jabari Parker's 20 points, 13 rebounds, and 3 assists was nice last night. But, you know, I watched him around the rim, too, when there was help defense needed. There's another video on Twitter, too, where it looks like Jabari's like a broken 2K player. Like, when your batteries run out in your controller and all of a sudden you stop controlling your player, he's kind of just like running in place. That's what Jabari Parker did on help defense too. And look, I'm not trying to do this every episode, every game, every recap is a pile on Jabari Parker. But the defense hasn't been great, and I had to mention it because this is the first time in 12 games where this has happened 100 times over and over and over again that we actually got an emotional reaction out of Fred Hoiberg. How about that for once? Because I think if any coach in the NBA sees this 100 times over, you're going to see it before 12 games into the season. So thank God somebody woke Fred Hoiberg up and said, actually show a little emotion to these guys for once.
Yeah, and you'd love to see that. And you know, I'm really curious to know just how much Fred actually has to monitor his, you know, his heart rate and his getting worked up and things like that because of his heart condition. You know, the guy's had 2 heart surgeries, and the reason he doesn't wear a tie with his suit like every other NBA coach is the fact that it constrains the, you know, the blood flow or whatever it is. So a lot of people think, you know, the reason that Fred is always so calm and just very monotone on the sideline is because he can't get worked up because it's bad for his health. I mean, if Fred Hoiberg behaved on the sidelines the way that Tibbs does, he'd be dead by now. Like, I think that that's actually scientifically accurate. But even still, come on. Like, are you telling me that he is in such jeopardy of damaging his or risking his, you know, healthy well-being that he can't show a little animation and get worked up, you know, a few times over the course of a game? If so, then the guy shouldn't be on the sideline coaching. That's my opinion. If that's really what's constricting him so much to showing a little bit of life, whether it's yelling at his teammate, whether it's yelling at his players for not getting back on defense, whether it's yelling at a ref when he disagrees with a call, that is part of the job. You, as a coach, have to defend your guys when they need defending, and you have to yell at your guys when they deserve to be yelled at. So if this super mellow, chilled-out Fred demeanor is really connected to his heart condition, then I'm sorry, and I may sound harsh and not very sympathetic, but then I think that should disclude him from being able to be a coach, because that's part of the job.
Well, look, the assistants get on the guys, too, and I think... Now, like, if, for Bulls fans who didn't know that before, watch the assistant coaches, because they're usually the ones dogging guys, you know, off the bench, screaming at guys, emotional reactions. So maybe they're trying to play that part, because, like, last night you can see on some of the highlights, like, just watch the Bulls bench in disgust on some of the transition defensive plays or some of the plays where everything's completely broken down and the Pelicans were getting easy buckets. Go back and watch the assistant coaches, because the reaction is just priceless. But, you know, on top of all those negatives, you know, even with all these injuries, the Bulls hung around. They had a 9-point game against a Pelicans team who had just come in and lost 6 in a row. You know, you get a healthy Anthony Davis and a guy in Nico Mirotic. Both of those guys obviously exposing the front court a little bit, but also it didn't help either. The Bulls didn't have a great night from the 3-point line. They shot 29% on 9 of 31 attempts. And you come into the game getting out-rebounded again. A lot of second-chance points for the Pelicans. And like I said before, too, a lot of those easy transition buckets end up stacking a lead pretty quickly. And the Bulls had a chance at this game, man. They were within 2 possessions of the Pelicans before everything kind of fell off the railings in the fourth quarter. So anything else of positive note from this Bulls game, from this Bulls team that you saw?
Not really. It's hard to take away positives outside of Wendell from this game. Blakeney had a rough night, 3 of 11 shooting. Justin Holiday had a gross 3 of 12 performance from behind the arc. Zach LaVine got 22 to keep his 20-point game streak alive. All 12 games this season, LaVine's hit at least the 20-point mark, but he was only 9 of 26, and he only got to the free throw line once. Like, even LaVine did not have a good game. And I'm sorry, I know you asked me if there are any other positives we could take away from this game. It's a positive and it's a negative. Finally, the Bulls were in a game late, and guess what? Fred only played campaign 15 minutes in this game, and campaign was nowhere to be found late in that game. Because, even in the Knicks game on Monday, like, why was campaign playing in that game late? Played like crap. The guy has not been playing well recently. I don't think he has earned his starting spot in place to fill the void of Chris Dunn. I think Archie Diacono has looked better. We have these other interesting pieces. Shaq Harrison hasn't gotten a whole lot of run. Another DNP last night. He's had a few DNPs recently. Tyler Ulis down there in the G League. Let's take a look at him. I mean, if you're shorthanded and you have all this Rolodex of various options, but campaign looks bad, then try somebody else.
Campaign kind of did it to himself last night, and I think this is starting to close the book here, finally, on Cameron Payne. Like, last night he comes into the game, he goes 3 straight possessions on terrible shots, a 3-pointer, and then 2 drives straight to the rack where they were terrible, terrible looks. And you could see Fred Hoiberg immediately pulls Cameron Payne out of the game right after that. And I think that's where kind of Cameron Payne hurt himself. And like last night, I'm like, dude, like, the Bulls are within 6 points and you missed on 3 straight possessions. The Pelicans came down and scored on all 3 of those possessions. So I'm like sitting there like, what are you doing, man? Like, you're doing this to yourself. So 15 minutes from Cameron Payne as opposed to Ryan Arcidiacono's 33 minutes. At this point, why doesn't Fred Hoiberg just start Ryan Arcidiacono? Like, what are we doing?
I mean, honestly, I think at this point he should.
It's clear that's the guy that's going to play the starter minutes.
And unless Fred really, and he has staggered them at times, unless Fred is just essentially resigned to letting LaVine operate as the de facto point guard until Dunn gets back with the first unit and needs Archie to efficiently and carefully run that second unit. Because Archie Diacono, as I'm not sure after last night, but I'm pretty sure coming into last night's game, had the third best assist to turnover ratio in the league and has been very careful with the basketball. And it's, I think, been a very, a very helpful thing for that second unit, because it's not a very talented second unit, let's be real. If he all of a sudden had to put Campaign running that second unit explodes and becomes terrible. At least with LaVine running the first unit offense, Cam can play 15 to 20 minutes functioning as an off-ball guard who maybe shoots. But even then, and that goes back to my point from a minute ago, I don't even think Cam is deserving of that as a starter who's playing off the ball with LaVine handling the point guard duties. I start Archie Diacono and give Shaq Harrison some minutes with that bench unit. I've liked what I've seen from Shaq Harrison. Tyler Ulis, throw him in there. Why not? Campaign right now, I just don't see any reason to play him other than Gar asking Fred to play him.
I was going to say, I think if this was 100% Fred Hoiberg's decision, Cameron Payne would be getting some DNPs when Chris Dunn comes back.
What I have heard is that Fred hates Cam. Like, does not like him. Does not want to play him. But, hey, guess what? Fred has bosses. Fred's boss would really like to legitimize the fact that they traded Cam and gave up Taj and Doug and a pick to get Cam.
Last thing I got for you before we go to a break, Justin Holiday didn't have a great tryout, a great impression for the Pelicans. You know, that's been kind of the running joke the last couple days on Twitter. Is Justin Holiday's performance. There potentially could be a trade that the Bulls could work out with the Pelicans team, but his performance last night did not help. Ultimately, I don't know what you're going to continue to see him, I think, until you run out of juice to squeeze as far as trade value. You know, we laughed in the summer that there was none, but Holiday shot over 40% from three, so maybe there is some value there. But yeah, not a great performance from him last night. And I think on top of all of that, I think Ryan Archie Diacono and Wendell Carter Jr. had the two best nights of the three guys. And this was the first game I think we saw LaVine kind of struggle with his shot, 9 for 26. Only got to the free throw line once for two attempts. That's the clear difference here, is he relied more on his shot last night than he did to try to drive to the rack. And that's kind of plausible when you've got Anthony Davis and Julius Randle to deal with down low. So, yeah, 107 to 98. The Bulls take the loss here. They're 3-9 to start and give their Pelicans their first win in seven games. We'll be back here on Locked On Bulls in just a minute. Want to remind our listeners out there, though, right now we're paired and partnered with The Athletic. If you don't know what The Athletic is, it was founded here in Chicago as a subscription-based publisher of smarter sports coverage for diehard fans. No ads, no pop-ups, no autoplay videos. Subscribers have access to local coverage of all five teams here in Chicago, as well as national coverage from writers like Seth Davis, Ken Rosenthal, and more. TheAthletic.com/LockedOnBulls for 40% off right now. That's $2.99 a month. Do it right now for the best sports writing in this city. TheAthletic.com/LockedOnBulls for 40% off. Do it right now. Head over there. You won't find any other place covering the Bulls and Chicago sports in a better environment. Go do that right now. Download the app at TheAthletic.com. Be right back here on Locked On Bulls. Stay with us. Back here on Locked On Bulls, 331-979-1369 is our text and voicemail line. Drop us your thoughts. Want to hear from you. Voicemails, text messages, whenever you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show, 331-979-1369. All right, Matt, on to a conversation about one of the Bulls' injured players, because we haven't really gotten a timetable on Denzel Valentine. Didn't really know the severity of his injury. You know, when initially he went down back in late September, we were said 1 to 2 weeks, that the injury was just a mild sprain to the ankle. And we're hanging around, 2 weeks go by, no real evaluation, no real positive news on Denzel Valentine. And then Casey Johnson comes out with this report now. We're now almost 5 weeks since Denzel Valentine's injury, if not longer, and still haven't seen any signs of improvement. And it doesn't look like it's getting any better at this point. And I've got a feel for Denzel Valentine, who, coming off his strongest year as an NBA player, now has had to deal with this injury. And it seems like it's gonna linger longer than we maybe initially thought.
Yeah. This is one of the instances where it's like, well, I was right, and I love being right, but this is a really bummer thing to be right about. Go back and listen to our episode when the news of Denzel's ankle first broke. What did I say on this very podcast? I said I would be shocked if he plays in any of the preseason games, and I would not at all be surprised if this lingers well into the regular season. Even though at the time it was reported, like, yeah, maybe he's out for like a week or 2 weeks with this sprained ankle. I said, I'm not buying it. Denzel has a history of bad ankles. He's had his ankles surgically repaired. A badly sprained ankle basically wrecked the first half of his rookie season, and he never got back on track after that season. This had a lingering effect and a longer lasting effect written all over it as soon as it was first reported. And I sat here on this podcast and said, don't be surprised if we are 10, 15 games into the regular season and Denzel's still not back. Here we are, out indefinitely, suffering a setback just from doing straightforward jogging like on a treadmill. Dude hasn't even begun, as you know, according to that Casey report that you referenced, hadn't even begun doing lateral work yet. Not even moving side to side. He suffered a setback with a sprained ankle just jogging on a treadmill. This is bad. And it is bad, but it is at the same time not surprising.
Yeah, the one thing about this too is they didn't realize that there was a bone bruise, which immediately when they figured that out, they shut Valentine down. And he hasn't been able to do anything of sorts, any type of athletic movement, anything until this Saturday when Casey wrote this piece. You know, just looking from Denzel Valentine's side of this too, I think I'm curious once he is healthy and comes back to the Bulls, how he kind of responds to this, because, you know, he mentions it pretty clearly. He said, you know, it's been tough sitting out, you know, not being in there fighting with the guys after such a good summer, he had mentioned after the Bulls Rockets game. He said, I can't look back, just having to keep improving every day. But he also notes too, you know, like watching all of these guys off the bench come in and provide somewhat of a filler role. Holiday's been okay this season. You know, Antonio Blakeney has come on strong. And so all of those guys, kind of Denzel Valentine thinking that was going to be the role he was going to fill. Now seeing those two guys on top of Hutchison having some flashes here in positions where Denzel Valentine's supposed to play. So I think that's where I'm concerned now is once he gets back, does he feel like he's going to have to overdo things to try to make up for lost time?
Yeah, I mean, you hope that at some point he gets back out there and you hope that he, you know, all this talk, like, remember, but before the season was starting, Denzel, even like when he was shut down at the end of last season and he decided to have that other procedure to get as much of a fully healthy offseason as he could under his belt, he was talking about feeling like he deserved to be a starter on this roster. And you and I kind of laughed about that. Said, you know, we don't see that, but we do see him as a very valuable piece of this bench unit right now. And when you look at the fact that, you know, outside of Blakeney chucking up every open shot and he sees and some not open shots he sees, and Justin Holiday, who is so streaky, so hot and cold, as I mentioned, 3-for-12 last night, and marking it on the shelf, you don't really have, outside of Zach LaVine, a whole lot of three-point threats on this roster right now. Wendell's taken a couple, knocked down a couple, but he's certainly like still working on making that a reliable part of his game. And laugh about it or not, C. Red Fred's wrong about a lot of stuff. One of the things that he is not wrong about is citing Denzel being the most efficient three-point shooter on this roster last season. You can laugh at that, but the numbers back that up. I mean, it's really unfortunate that he is going through this and is still not available, because this roster is so depleted right now that they really could use Denzel's help. But with this latest update and now the term out indefinitely, I'd be surprised if we see Denzel, you know, by New Year's. I really would.
His comment, too, to just kind of follow up, he said, before the season, I knew my role, but at this point, I've been out. When I come back, I'll just accept my role. I'll be happy just being out there playing. The other thing that kind of struck me was he said, my strength and explosiveness will take a while back to get back. So if we're talking about a return table of Denzel Valentine somewhere, I don't know, middle of December, maybe even if there is a setback or two, not till the new year, and that explosiveness isn't back, I don't think we're going to see the same Denzel Valentine we saw last year, because I think it's going to take him a month, 2 months to get back into rhythm and get back fully healthy and stay there. So that worries me about this, you know, and watching him get passed up, and the window's kind of closing too. You know, he is a young player, but you got to also remember, four-year player, he's in his third year in the NBA. Like, we're talking about a small window here starting to close on Denzel Valentine. So I'm hoping he gets back, but the one thing that it worries me the most, and it's cited in Casey's article too, is an interview on Sports Medicine Weekly on WSCR 670. Two physicians that run that radio show were talking about Denzel Valentine's injury and his surgery even going all the way back to May 2017. This is what the quote reads, and I don't know what your reaction was to this, Matt, but I want to get it. If it's chronically damaged and Denzel Valentine had some prior injuries back in his collegiate days, then we're going to reattach the ligament to the bone, where we put some anchors right into the bone and structure attached to it. Sometimes we have an augment that. We'll have to take some local tissue to reinforce it, and that's the big concern. How strong did it heal? How well did that initial tissue heal? How strong was it reinforcing it? No doubt when Denzel goes back, he's going to be taped up every game he plays in. He's going to be wearing really properly custom shoes for him, because this will be a problem that's going to hang with him for a couple years. So not only are we going to have to be concerned about the ankle going forward for the next few years, but he also has bad knees too. So both of that combination to me doesn't sound like anything positive for Valentine. And that's where I can kind of feel him coming off the best season so far. Does that worry you now, thinking about Valentine, possible restructure of a deal, trying to trade him? Like, the value has to decrease significantly when you hear things like that.
Yeah, and I honestly, as far as a league-wide market value standpoint, I don't know how much value Denzel had if you were trying to look at him as a trade option. The team did exercise his option for next season, and then he's got a qualifying offer in 2020-21. I mean, to me, like, the ankles combined with the knees, we were hoping after he had showed some strong signs last season that maybe Denzel could turn into at least a solid bench role for this team. But, I mean, at this point, I'm almost ready to just throw in the towel on Denzel and his NBA future. I hate to say it, and I'm hoping that the kid, you know, manages to battle through all this stuff. But this is a team that has dealt with so many injuries, and how many chances do you give a guy who's got bad ankles and bad knees? I think it's in the Bulls' best interest to move on. I really do.
It'll be interesting. I'm hoping we get him back. I don't know. Sometime, I would assume now that the injury that he suffered, not even be able to do anything until this weekend. To me, that says probably Markkanen, Dunn, and Portis for sure will be back before Denzel Valentine, if he is, before the new year's over. So I just wanted to bring that up to our listeners, because I was thrown back when I read this about the injury and how it might linger, and that adding that ankle injury on top of the bad knees that we already knew about. You know, he had some non-invasive surgeries over the summer too, to kind of alleviate some things in his knees. But that's all a concern for a guy that's 25 years old. Like you said, picked up the option for next year. He's 26. So by the time he's looking at his first real NBA contract, he's going to be 27 already with bad ankles and bad knees. So I hope it's not the end for Valentine here, because I think he can be productive. It's just about being able to stay on the floor, and I don't know how confident I am in saying he's going to be able to do that consistently.
That's essentially what I was saying when this first came out in training camp, with the sprained ankle. My gut feeling was this is not a sprained ankle where Denzel take a couple of weeks off to just nurse it back to health and he'll be back. No, I saw this being a month-long problem. Here we are. It sucks. It's not surprising. Hopefully he gets back on the floor at some point this season, but you can't imagine it, and that, like you were saying, that he'll be 100% at any point this season, and that's a shame.
Got to take another short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back and wrap up the show, brought it up on Twitter yesterday about which trio you would rather have as far as starting an NBA team, the Lakers or the Bulls. So we'll talk about that and a few other things when we come back. 331-979-1369 is the place to hit us up. Do that right now. Text messages and voicemails there. Stay with us here at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. back here on Locked On Bulls. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. So I referenced it before a break. Josh Lloyd over at Locked On Fantasy Basketball, which, by the way, if you play fantasy basketball, really just want a solid, everyday kind of look and overview of the NBA, I highly suggest his podcast and all the content he's doing on social media, too. It's crazy. Go follow him on Instagram, Locked On Fantasy Basketball. So go do that there. But, you know, he referenced this question to a lot of his listeners and a lot of NBA fans in general. Looking at the NBA so far, their landscape, which trio of guys, young core, would you rather have? Would you rather have the Lakers in Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma? Or would you rather have the Bulls young core in Zach LaVine, Wendell Carter Jr., and Lauri Markkanen? And that, I was taken back a little bit by how much support was given in for Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr., and Zach LaVine. A 71% of people on this poll said that they'd rather have the Bulls young core than the Lakers young
core. Yeah, I mean, I voted that way. And I said I didn't think it's all that close. I mean, I think Kyle Kuzma surprised a lot of people with his season last year, especially as late as he was taken in the draft. I think Lonzo Ball had a kind of meh rookie year. And Brandon Ingram, people are talking about him taking a big step forward this season. We'll see if that happens or not. And we'll see how those guys play as supporting characters in the new LeBron Lakers show. But I'm just looking at talent on paper, and I'm looking at potential ceilings with expected floors of those three players. And I'm sorry, this is not a biased homer opinion. I honestly think that I would choose that Bulls trio every time, 100 times out of 100.
I think if we're being fair about it, you know, you pair LaVine and Ball together, who would you rather have in that instance? I'm taking Zach LaVine 100 times over 100 times. You pair Lauri Markkanen and Kyle Kuzma together, both same draft class, similar players, and I didn't think Lauri Markkanen got the credit he deserved last year, and a lot of the praise, and it's obvious, the Lakers, you know, rising stars, everybody loves the Lakers, so Kyle Kuzma is going to get a little bit more of that attention. While he did have a solid season and he's been healthy this year, he's been playing like this quasi-wing position. He's spent most of his time at small forward. I think he's a good player, and I think he is going to continue to be a good player for the Lakers, but the ceiling is much higher on Markkanen, right? So I think in that facet, I would take Markkanen over Kuzma, and then you've got Carter and Ingram. Look, Ingram's a great scorer, and a dude that I think, for the most part, can be a solid NBA contributor for you. But I don't know if I think the ceiling is starting to disappear or at least lower for Ingram. And I know a lot of people have said, oh, this is the year that he's going to break out. But man, the dude's 6'8", 6'9", 190 pounds soaking wet. You know, you watch him get bodied and bodied and bodied. And I don't know what they're going to do over there with the Lakers. But I think I'm rather taking Wendell Carter Jr. and his ceiling, too, over Brandon Ingram's, which we've already seen.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, there's a variety of sample sizes so far. You know, some of these, Wendell's a rookie, and, you know, everybody else has, you know, at least two seasons under their belt, or, you know, I guess in Markkanen's case, just a rookie season and no part of sophomore season yet. But if you pair them the way you did, would you rather have Lonzo or Zach LaVine? Lonzo's player efficiency rating for his career, NBA career thus far, 12.7. LaVine, 13.9. You pair Markkanen and Kuzma together. Kuzma, 14.4. Pretty impressive. Markkanen, he's got that beat, 15.6. And then the big gap, if you're putting Wendell and Brandon Ingram together. Wendell's player efficiency rating through his rookie season, 18.9, the highest of all six, and Brandon Ingram just 11.1. So, you know, take those numbers for what they are. As I said, a small sample size for everybody, and some of them being just a rookie season. But I like those numbers, and you use the eye test and you use numbers when you're talking about young players, their potential, their ceiling, all that stuff. And I would take this Bulls trio over that Lakers trio, and I would do so confidently.
This Bulls core is also younger than that Lakers core, too. You know, you start thinking about not just the players, but the contracts, how long they're going to stay with the team, which one are you going to go with? And the Bulls is younger and potentially the ceiling is way higher than those group of three guys. And look, I don't watch the Lakers every single night, and I don't plan on it. Maybe a little bit more often now that LeBron's there. But, you know, to me, and this might be biased just because we cover the Bulls here, but if you stack up their numbers like you had said and then also consider their ceilings, I think it's hard-pressed to make an argument for the Lakers over the Bulls, and I can't sit here and do that right now. And maybe things change when Markkanen comes back or Ingram starts to light it up. But Kyle Kuzma's a good story, too, and I was just, I think the overall thing that caught me off guard was this Bulls young core is getting a little bit more credit than they did a year ago when this rebuild started. Even when Dunn was back and Markkanen was playing pretty solid last year, I still felt like this core was kind of been like, yeah, Markkanen's going to be all right, but Dunn stinks. I don't think Levine's going to be anything. And now the tune has kind of changed, and we're not even 2 years into a rebuild.
Well, and notice that Josh Lloyd posed the question using the trio for Chicago of Wendell, Levine, and Markkanen.
Right.
Not done. And I think that the reason people are starting to feel better about this young core and the reason that that poll went the way it did, going towards, you know, close to 70-30 in favor of that Bulls core, is that people are already starting to pay attention to Wendell, who at just 19 is holding his own against guys like Joel Embiid and Anthony Davis, who looks like his offensive game is developing at a pretty aggressive rate, who already looks like one of the better young rim-protecting defensive bigs in this league. Like, that is why people are starting to feel a little bit better. That, coupled with Levine looking like a more dominant offensive force this season compared to the small sample size of still recovering from an ACL, not 100% Levine that we saw last season, when it was Dunn can't stay healthy, Levine looks meh last year, and yeah, Markkanen's great, but he's only one guy. A lot of people were not very convinced about this Bulls young core. There are still plenty of people with reservations and some skeptics about just how far this Bulls core can go and how big of a, you know, a realistic contender they can build themselves to be, and that's fair. I would count myself among those people. But it is the presence of Wendell through the first 12 games of the season and the increased force of Zach LaVine, offensive dominant player, that have people feeling better about this young
core. Would you trade any of those three guys for any of the Lakers' three guys?
That's a tough one.
Kuzma, Ingram, Ball, Markkanen, Levine, Carter. You gonna swap one of those guys for the other? I feel like my bias is playing in here a little bit, but I think the only one guy that I would say was maybe Ball, just because of his ceiling and because the desperateness of needing a point guard of the future and a guy that can distribute. And I can't even pick the guy that I would use for the Bulls to trade away.
Right. I wouldn't want to give away any of those. Like, maybe it sounds crazy, but maybe LaVine? But I, like, the more I've seen from LaVine recently, yeah, he's had some struggles. He's trying to fight through getting double and triple teamed, and he's had some bad shots and some bad possessions late in games. But that's going to come when you're clearly the best player playing with a bunch of scrubs every night. And to me, like, no, I don't want Lonzo, because you know what comes with Lonzo?
Uh-oh, welcome to Big Baller Zone.
No, hard pass on that.
You are a hater.
Well, I know you're fronting a campaign for the Windy City Bulls to sign LiAngelo, so, you know, it's made known that he wants to play in the G League this year. He's ready to sign a contract, and I think his brother is going to be about a year away from that, too. But the other thing I wanted to mention really quickly, Carter, Levine, and Markkanen have the best three-point percentage among the six. And while the sample size does vary because the amount of games that they've all played, it's been a variety. But Wendell Carter Jr., 38.5%. Zach LaVine at 37.2%. Lauri Markkanen at 36.2%. And then Kuzma, Ingram, and Ball, 36%, 33%, and 31% from three. And I'll take at least 2 3-pointers per game. So I looked at that, and I was also curious what the defensive numbers say. You know, this doesn't, it's not end-all, be-all, but I was curious what their offense and defensive rating are. And the best defensive rating came from Lonzo Ball. Second best from Carter so far. Kuzma, Markkanen, Ingram, and then LaVine. Ingram and LaVine are at 113 and 114 defensive rating, respectively. So I was curious about that, too. But I don't find myself wanting to trade any of those three for any of the Lakers three that we had just named. But I'm curious if any of the Bulls fans out there would do any of those deals. If you could swap one for one, which one would you do? Would you trade any of those three guys for any of the Lakers three guys? So I'm curious what the answer is from Bulls fans.
We should do a poll on Twitter today. That's a good question.
So put your answer on Twitter. We'll throw up a poll as we post this episode. Or if you want to drop us a text message or a voicemail on this subject, you're free to do so. 331-979-1369. We'd love to hear from you.
And then you talking about you going to beat Michael Jordan?
Michael Jordan.
How are
you going to beat me?
You know what? It's good.
I got to hear how you going to beat me.
Pick your poison.
How's he going to beat me?
Why are you saying stuff like
this? Tell me how he's going to beat me.
Why are you doing this? Why are you? Is this another marketing tool of yours?
Check this out.
What?
Everybody used to say who was the best, Michael Jordan or LeBron.
Who did you think was the best?
They
who
said,
did you
think was the best? Kobe or LeBron?
Who did you think was the best?
Guess what the story is now? Who's better, LeVar or Michael Jordan?
Ain't nobody think about no damn LeVar.
Yes, they are. Look LeVar. At you. Who are we
ain't
talking about?
Think about no LeVar.
That's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malian, at Bulls underscore Peck. Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and on Instagram at LockedOnBulls, and our text and voicemail line at 331-979-1369. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's Saturday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow to drive you into the weekend. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.